Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Raven Real Steel Radio. This is your girl, Raven the Serial Poet, coming to bring to y'all another night of horror. This is night 30, and y'all know what it is. It's that dirty 30. You know what I'm saying? I hope everybody had a good day. I know I have. If you didn't have a good day, buck up, baby. It's going to get better. It will always get better. It ain't nothing that bad. Trust me. So, with that being said, I know a lot of y'all have been saying that the show has been ending early. I'm sorry, you know, some unforeseen things have been arising. I don't have no control over that. But what I will say is this, at least it's happening at the end of the series, rather at the beginning or the middle of the series, because, yeah, that would have been bad. But I'm not going to make no excuses. Forgive me. I'm sorry. I apologize. Whatever. And we're going to get into these shows because one thing I know for sure and two for certain, these have been keeping me up on my toes. I've been hearing people talking about it on Instagram and Facebook. You know, my little close group of friends. Nothing too big. Nothing too major or whatever the case may be. But what I do know is that wherever you talk about it at and whatever you do on your daily basis, if you have not listened to the first 29 episodes, yes, there are more episodes leading up to this one. If you have not listened to those, you might want to do that. Will they be scary? Some people said, yeah, they had their little moment where they was like, you know, I don't know if I'm going to be able to sleep tonight. And then they had some that was like, man, that shit wasn't even funny. It was funny as hell, though. But it wasn't even scary or whatever. But I ain't going to hold y'all. I'm going to stop rambling. Tonight is the night. Let me stop. Okay. So if you want to call in, the number is 914-205-5813. That is 914-205-5813. We going to get into this show. Let's go.
This story is from a female's point of view. When I was in college, I worked in an Applebee's to make ends meet. I worked there from freshman year to senior year, so I had some regular customers. I had one that tipped me the most, and his name was Larry. Anyways, one day, while at work, I received a friend request on Facebook from a guy that was really attractive. I checked his page out before I accepted it, and it seemed legit, and he was in my city. As soon as I accepted it, he messaged me and said, "Hey, thanks for accepting my request." That was usually code for creep when someone does that, but he was cute. I said no problem, and we continued to converse. Eventually, after a few days chatting, we decided to go on a date. I decided to meet at Chili's on a Friday at 6 p.m. because I don't know this guy, and maybe he's crazy. I arrived at the restaurant before him, and I messaged him to let him know that our table was under my name, and he said okay. After about 20 minutes, I messaged him back, but he didn't reply until 20 minutes later, telling me that he wasn't going to make it. I was pissed, but I ordered and ate my food. I left and I drove home. When I got to my apartment, I walked up the stairs to get to my apartment and I hear something behind me. I get to my door, turn to my left, and I see a man standing at the bottom of the stairs looking at me. I look closer and I see that it's Larry, my customer at work. I frantically asked him, "What is he doing here?" And he told me, "It's okay. Always make sure you make it home safe." Then he said, "Sorry, I couldn't make it to the date." I said, "What?" I tried unlocking my door, but I dropped my keys, and he started running up the stairs yelling, "It's not what you think." I grabbed the keys, unlocked the door, and ran inside, closing my door behind me. He started banging on my door, telling me he was my best customer and he deserved me. I called the cops, and they caught him outside in my car, just sitting there calmly. After that, I deleted all of my social media and dating apps. Then I quit my job at Applebee's. Ever since that experience, I'm very paranoid of people's intentions, and I always carry a pistol.
This story happens to me on the deep web. The deep web is basically the hidden internet that contains dark content, such as drugs, pedophiles, hitmen, and torture. None of that really interests me. The only reason why I was on the deep web was to look for government secrets and stuff like that. After looking for links that had to do with that type of stuff, I eventually got bored and decided to find other things on the deep web. I had a VPN on, so if I ever came across something illegal, I wouldn't get caught. I then came across a link that led me to a site. It was called the Devil's Chamber. It gave a description of the website. Basically, it was a snuff film, aka torture and murder films. There was a black video box with a play button. I was very curious and clicked on the play button. A black screen popped up with a timer and a live chat box with people waiting for something. The timer said 3 minutes till showtime. I got curious and typed in the chat what everyone was waiting for. They all said, a murder live stream. I didn't like this, and I put my cursor over the X. But as soon as I was going to click out, text appeared on the black screen that said, "It's showtime." I watched and waited to see what was going to happen. Just then, a screen appeared with a woman tied to a chair in a dimly lit room with a door. Then, someone with a mask appeared on screen as well. The person in the mask stared at the camera and said, "It's time for pain." He then opened a door and closed it behind him. A few seconds later, he came out with a dog tied to a chain. The dog was barking like crazy in a really aggressive way. It was a pit bull, and I knew what was about to happen. The pit bull lunged at the woman, attacking her while still tied to the chair. She was screaming in pain as the dog was biting and chewing her apart. A few minutes later, she stopped screaming, and she was dead. The person in the mask then walked out of the room with the dog, leaving the woman whose flesh was literally torn apart. I closed out immediately and deleted the Tor browser. I will never, and I repeat, never go back on the deep web again.
I had three really good friends, and their names were Kevin, Ryan, and Tommy. Every summer our parents would take us on a vacation. We always stayed in a remote cabin in the forest of Minnesota. The cabin was located on a large island in the middle of Lake Vermilion. Eventually, when we were old enough, our parents let us go to the cabin on our own for the first time. When we got there, we parked the car on the gravel road beside the lake. Then we had to take a boat across the lake, about half a mile to reach the cabin. There were a few other cabins on the island, but they were all at least half a mile away. The cabin was quite small and only had a kitchen, a bathroom, and two bedrooms. At night, it was pitch black. There were no street lights for miles, and the only light came from the moon. There were no curtains on the windows, so when you were sleeping at night, you could see the moon shining down on the trees in the lake outside. On the third night of our trip, we set up a campfire by the edge of the lake. The moon was full and a pale white glow was shimmering across the lake. We were gazing up at the stars when all of a sudden we heard a splashing sound, as if something was moving about in the water. Ryan suddenly stood up and pointed, saying, "What the hell is that?" We all looked in the direction he was pointing, peering into the darkness. After a while, I couldn't make out what he was pointing at. I'll never forget the feeling of terror that came over me. The hair on the back of my neck stood up, and goosebumps appeared on my arms. I was paralyzed in fear. Out in the middle of the lake, there was a woman's head. It was just floating there on the surface of the water, staring directly at us. She had pale white skin and long black hair. Her hair was matted to her face. The rest of her was submerged or not even there. We tried to tell ourselves that it was just a loon. They are black and white birds that hunt at night, diving deep into the water. It didn't look like a loon, but that's what we tried to convince ourselves it was. We threw some more wood on the fire and tried to forget about it, but it still gave me the creeps. About an hour later, I had to go to the toilet, so I walked down to the edge of the dock and peed into the lake. Looking out over the moonlit lake, I noticed the thing was still there, but now it was much closer. It still looked like the woman's head, and it still seemed to be staring right at me. Its face was still extremely pale, as if it hadn't been out in the sun for years, and I could easily make out some facial features, the eyes and the nose. A feeling of incredible unease came over me as I realized it couldn't be a loon. There was no way a loon could just tread water for that long. There were no ripples around it either. It wasn't moving at all. It was just standing there, stiff as a board, submerged in the water. I immediately zipped up my pants and ran back up to the dock, to where my friends were, sitting around the campfire. I told them what I'd seen, but none of them dared to go down to the dock to take a closer look. We tried to tell ourselves it was just a log or a tree branch, just floating out in the water. I could tell everyone else felt uneasy too. None of us really believed that. We went back into the cabin and we shut the door, locking it behind us. It was very late and we just needed sleep. None of us mentioned the thing in the lake. We were all trying to avoid talking about it, honestly. There were no curtains on the windows, and I was getting ready for bed. I couldn't help but taking one last look. Peering out of the window, I could see the lake clearly, illuminated by the full moon. But the thing wasn't there anymore. It had completely vanished. I let out a sigh of relief, thinking it was a log that just floated away, or else it sank below the surface. Or perhaps it had been a loon, and it finally flown away. It was very hot that night, and we had to sleep with the windows open. My friend Tommy and I slept in one bedroom, and my two other friends slept in the other. We left our bedroom doors open. I was finding it hard to sleep, very, very hard. It was the middle of the summer and there wasn't even a slight breeze. The heat was stifling. As I lay there, I thought I could hear someone walking around outside the cabin. I kept my eyes tightly shut and tried to tell myself it was just my imagination. It sounded like someone with bare, wet feet pacing back and forth. I was trembling with fear, but I felt so weak I couldn't move. The footsteps, they sounded like they were walking up the steps to the cabin door. I wanted to shout out to my friends, but I was frozen in terror. Then the footsteps turned around and sounded like they were running down the steps and toward the lake. After a while, the footsteps faded away. I reached over and shook my friend Tommy. He was already awake and he claimed he had heard the footsteps as well. Just then, I was startled to see Ryan coming running into our room. When he stepped into the moonlight, I could see his face and the expression on it was very, very disturbing. He told us, "We need to leave." I asked, "Why? What did you hear?" He said, "Let's just go," he insisted. "Let's get to the boat and it's time to go." He wouldn't answer. He just ran back into his room. We followed him and found Kevin sitting on his bed, already packing up his things. Ryan was running around frantically grabbing his stuff and stuffing it into a bag. "What's wrong?" I demanded. "Ryan, what the hell is wrong with you? Tell us." He just stopped in his tracks and stared at me. There was a hunted look in his eyes. I would never forget what he said. He told us he was turning over in his bed to get more comfortable when he suddenly saw at the top right corner of his window someone was peeking in. As soon as he set his eyes on it, the face vanished. He said all he saw was long black hair hanging down the window, ghostly white skin, and one large eye staring at him. When he said that, it chilled us to the bone. We realized that if the face was in the top right corner of the window, that meant the thing had to be damn near 8 feet tall, or else floating in midair. I felt like I was going to be sick. "Let's just go," Ryan said in a very serious tone. "Let's just go now." We all agreed and packed our stuff up as quickly as we could. We grabbed our bags and ran out of the cabin, locking the door behind us. As we scrambled down the front steps, I glanced to the side and I saw footprints, bare, wet footprints, in the dirt all around the cabin. We ran down to the boat and threw our stuff in. We untied the boat from the dock and we sped off. I looked back over my shoulder and stared at the island, but I didn't see anything moving. However, I had the strangest feeling that someone or something was watching us. When we finally reached the other side of the lake, we tied up the boat, stuffed our backpacks in the car, and drove off. We had been driving for about 10 minutes when, out of the blue, Ryan suddenly broke down sobbing. He kept saying over and over, "What was it, guys? What was it? What did we see?" On the way, we called our parents to tell them what happened. Ryan was freaking out, and we didn't know what to do. They told us to just get home safely and quickly. My friend's dad went up to the cabin a few days later and said he saw nothing out of the ordinary. However, he did mention that there were bare, wet footprints all around the cabin, which he thought was odd. Whatever Ryan saw in the window really hit him hard. After his breakdown, he had trouble sleeping and ended up having to go into therapy. They gave him some pills to calm him down and allow him to get decent night's sleep. As time went on, he recovered and ended up being fine. But to this day, he still can't sleep unless the curtains on his window are completely shut. To this day, I still cannot explain what we saw on the lake that night. I never went back to the cabin. Tommy and Kevin had both gone back and everything was fine. But Ryan refuses to go back, and frankly, I'm with him on this one. This happened to me in the 1970s. To be exact, it was November 23rd, 1971. I was 20 years old at the time and was really down on my luck. I was living in Portland, but I'm from Seattle, and I'll be going home very soon. I had lost my job and was about to be evicted from my apartment because I couldn't pay the rent. I will be flying back home to stay with my parents until I could find a new job or somehow get the money for my apartment, which would be very unlikely. I had one night left in my apartment before leaving. I didn't feel like staying home, so I decided to go for a walk and have a drink in a bar. On my way to the bar, I stopped at a convenience store and purchased a lottery ticket. I walked down the street and entered a nearby bar, where I ordered myself a beer. Not long after that, a man came inside and sat next to me and ordered a drink. We got to talking about life and just general conversation when he mentioned he was going to a flight the next day to Seattle. I laughed and asked him, "Wait, flight 305? He laughed and said, "Yeah, that's the one." He asked me why I was heading there. I told him I had money troubles, and coincidentally, he said the same thing. He seemed like a nice guy. We talked for about another hour before he decided to call it a night. Unfortunately, I never caught his name. I was about to leave the bar myself shortly after that when I heard over the TV that the lottery numbers would be announced. I decided to stay and check if I had won. Why not? And would you believe it, I won $15,000. Of course, I was beyond belief with shock. And of course, I wouldn't need to go back home because I had money now. The next day, I saw something on the news that a flight had been hijacked, and the plane was being held at ransom. It was the same flight I was going to be on. And I couldn't believe it, but the sketch of the guy they described who took the flight hostage was the exact same man I had been talking to in the bar. He used the name D.B. Cooper. If you didn't know, he threatened to explode the plane with a bomb unless he got $200,000, which he did. Then jumped out of the plane with the money and parachute and was never seen again. I didn't know why, but I never said anything to anyone. Even if I could, it's not like
I knew his real name. It was such a scary coincidence that the only thing that stopped me was the reason why I was in that predicament anyway. I needed money, and then I got some. It's strange how everything works out in life. When I was 17, I didn't have a driver's license. Most of the time I walk or hitchhike. There was this one night. There weren't that many cars on the road, and it was very cold. And this man pulled over. When the guy pulled over, I took a good look at the guy and figured I could take him if he tried anything. He was on the slender side and had a strange frailness about him, even though he looked healthy enough. I got into the car after we agreed on the destination. We exchanged names and I warmed my fingers up in front of the heating vent. He spoke quietly, asking a few questions along the lines of, was I local and how did I like living there? He said he only been here for a few months, but found it beautiful and hoped he could find happiness there. That comment struck me as a little odd, but I brushed it off. It began to snow and the road quickly got slippery. So he slowed and he kept his eyes straight out the windshield, driving silently. I was okay with that, as small talk was never my forte. About 10 minutes later, I noticed the car near the intersection we were approaching seemed to be sliding, so I said, "Watch out." He immediately hit the gas, shooting through the intersection and burst out with, "Don't ever scream at me." Needless to say, I was taken aback. I said, "Look, this is close enough. Just pull over here and I can get there." He didn't seem to hear me. So I said, "Richard, did you hear me? I said, you can pull over here and let me out." But no response. He just stared straight ahead, driving faster now than he did when it started snowing. To say I was scared doesn't seem to cover the depth of the fear that began to rise in me. I didn't know if I should stay quiet or speak, but I was damn sure not going to yell after his outburst. After about a mile, he began to mumble under his breath. I couldn't quite make out what he was saying, but I assumed he was speaking to me. So I said, "What did you say? I couldn't hear you." He began to speak quietly and rapidly, saying things like, "You're always yelling at me. I've told you time and time again, do not yell at me. I don't appreciate it. No, you don't listen. You don't listen." And I was just sitting there looking at him. I was at a complete loss. I didn't know what to say in response or if I should say anything at all. I contemplated just jumping out of the car, but nixed that idea when I realized the door lock was missing. There was just a silver lined hole where it should have been. I started to cry and debate with myself about causing an accident by grabbing the wheel and hoping for the best. When he suddenly looked at me for the first time since I had gotten in the car, he blinked several times rapidly, then slowed the car, pulling into a gas station. I waited to see if he unlocked the doors, not wanting to say anything to set him off again. After a minute or two, he quietly said, "I think I better let you out of here." And he hit the button to the door locks, and he opened the door. I wasn't about to hesitate, so I jumped out of the car as if I were on fire. I was about to turn and walk into the gas station when he called my name. He looked so damn sad and I hesitated. He apologized, said he was sorry if he had frightened me, that he never would have harmed me. And he asked if I'd be able to get home okay. I said I would and closed the door. He began to pull out of the gas station, but stopped suddenly. He just sat there for a couple of moments, his head down. I froze, wondering what the hell was up, and was about to run into the gas station, but he opened his window and yelled at me, waving something in his hand, my hat. I left it on his seat. I slowly approached the side of his car, and he handed it to me, apologizing again. I didn't know what else to say, so I just said, "Thanks." I watched as he drove off, making sure he was out of sight before moving on so he wouldn't know which direction I was heading. As I walked, I went to put my hat back on, and a piece of paper fell out of it. Folded into a paper was a $100 bill. The paper said, "I'm sorry. Please take a cab and don't hitchhike anymore tonight." I didn't. In fact, it was the last time I ever hitchhiked in my life. Would never, ever do that again.
One evening when I was in my junior year of high school, my mom and dad went out, leaving me home alone. I had a lot of homework to do, so I spent the whole evening sitting at a desk in my bedroom. My parents left the house around 6 p.m. When I was doing my homework, I put on my headphones and I listened to loud music. There was a big storm that night, and my desk was facing the window, so I could see the rain and the lightning outside. My parents got back around 11 p.m. When I saw their car drive up, I took off the headphones. As soon as my mom opened the front door and came inside, I heard her shout out my name. "What on earth happened in here?" she demanded in an angry voice. Confused, I ran downstairs. My mom was standing in the hallway with a furious look on her face. She pointed at the floor and yelled, "Was this you?" I looked down and I saw that the carpet was covered in muddy footprints. "I have no idea how those got there," I said. "I spent the whole night at my desk doing my homework." I watched as the look on her face changed from anger to confusion, and then to fear. We both realized at the same time that someone else must have been in the house. We followed the trail of footprints, trying to make sense of the whole situation. They started at the back door, which we usually left unlocked. Then we noticed something else. The footprints started at the back door, but there was no trail of footprints leaving through the back door. All of a sudden, we hear something loud, a pounding noise that echoed throughout the house. Then the sound of the front door being wrenched open and slammed shut again. We all ran into the garage and locked the door behind us. My mom took out her cell phone and called the police. She told them to come quickly as she shouted that someone's in our house. After what seemed like hours, a patrol car arrived with two police officers, a male and a female. One officer stayed with us in the garage while his partner went through the house, searching room by room. When she came back, the female officer told us that there was no one in the house and it was safe to go back in. As we were all breathing a high sigh of relief, she asked, "Whose bedroom is upstairs on the left?" My parents looked at me. "It's mine," I told the officer. She asked us to follow her. As we walked through the house, we could see the trail of muddy footprints leading from the back door through the living room, through the hallway, up the stairs, into my parents' bedroom, then towards my room. They stopped at my doorway. The female officer pointed at my door, which had been open the whole night. Scrawled on it in black marker was the following: 8:47, I see you. 8:53, you forgot to lock the back door. 8:59, you seem focused. 9:24, turn around. 9:47, look at me. 10:15, look at me. 10:37, look at me. 10:49, look at me. For more than 2 hours, someone had been standing in my doorway, watching me. To this day, I still shudder to think what would have happened if I had just turned around.
This story happened about 3 years ago. When I was 16, I had my first boyfriend, Ben, who just so happened to be my next door neighbor. For the first few months of dating, we were going fine. up until I had dinner at Ben's house one evening. His dad, Graham, gave me the creeps. From the first moment I ever met him, he was creepy to me. He shook my hand tightly and had a big grin on his face with his big, bulging eyes. At the dinner, I swear Graham never took his eyes off of me at all. Every now and then, I would glance over to see if he was still staring at me, and of course he was. From then on, I spent more time around Ben's house. We would watch movies in his room, play video games, or just study homework. Whenever I was at Ben's house, his dad would always be lingering around. Like he would always burst into the bedroom without knocking, asking things like, "How's everything?" or "I thought I heard you calling me." Basically an excuse to come in. It's like he wanted to catch us doing something, if you know what I mean. And whenever I would go to the bathroom, of course, he would try and come in, even though the door was locked. He would knock and say, "Oh, I didn't realize someone was in the bathroom." This creepy stuff went on for a while, maybe about 2 months, but there was this one incident that really scared me. Ben asked if I can go to the basement and grab a couple of pops. I went down there and looked around in the fridge to see what drinks they had. Then I heard the door close. It was the basement door. And then his dad came walking down the steps. He asked me what I was doing down there, and I told him I was just grabbing some pop for myself and Ben. I smiled and walked past him and headed up the stairs. I tried to open the basement door, but it was locked. His dad locked it behind him. I turned around and said, "Sir, could you help? The door is stuck." He didn't reply. I went back downstairs and I saw his dad with his top off rolling a can of Sprite on his body saying, "It's a hot day, isn't it?" I was extremely uncomfortable. And I asked once more, "Could you open the door because it seems to be stuck?" I didn't say locked because I didn't want him to know I was uncomfortable. He said to me, "Here's the key," and placed it on a small table next to him. And then he said, "Come and get it," while smiling with his tongue rubbing against his teeth. I let out a nervous, awkward laugh as I thought he was joking. He wasn't. I crouched down to grab the key, but just as I did, I could feel his face near mine, and he was smelling my hair. I could hear him, really close, breathing in through his nose. As soon as I got the key, I sped, walked up the stairs to open the basement door. I just left at that point, and I went home and cried in my bedroom. I never told anyone this story, and I broke up with Ben shortly after this incident. We lived there for 2 more years after that, until we moved away. Every now and then, I would see his dad in his garden or something, and he would always give me that same creepy smile like he did in the basement. My name is Chris, and this story happened to me last year when I was traveling with my dad across the United States. We were traveling in an RV. We were visiting Nevada. And of course, we had to go and check out Area 51. By the time we got there, it was pretty late and quite dark out. So we thought we would just park the RV, sleep, and check it out in the morning. That night, I think around 1 a.m. my dad was asleep, and I was playing some games on my iPad when I heard some footsteps outside our RV. I took one of my earplugs out so I could listen better, and it sounded like someone was slowly pacing. I took a subtle peek through our blinds. It was pitch black, but you could kind of see something moving. I woke my dad up telling him someone is out there. He took a look out the window and then told me to get a flashlight. I asked him, "You're not going out there, are you?" In a concerned voice, of course. But my dad said, "We have to see what it is." Nervously, we both went outside. We shined our light towards the figure. It looked to be a man with his back toward us. My dad spoke out, "Hello?" No answer, or even any movement. My dad spoke again, "Hello, can you hear me?" As we slowly got closer, you could see the man was wearing some kind of gown, like a hospital gown that patients wear. The man was still unresponsive. We got close enough to tap him on the shoulder, and the man slowly turned around. He looked kind of pale, as like a ghost, and his eyes were black, like they weren't even human. He stared right at us, and my dad stepped back in shock. Then we heard a noise. It was more footsteps. My dad shined his light in a direction, and what was right in front of us were more men. Men in patient gowns, black eyes, looking right at us. Me and my dad ran back into the RV and drove as fast as we could away from Area 51. We spent the rest of the night in the motel we found. We never went back to Area 51 after that.
A few years ago when I was in college, I would take odd jobs to pay my half of the rent. One day in particular, I was babysitting a set of twin boys that were 3 years old. The mother told me she hired me because she would only hire men due to her crazy ex-husband. I was confused when she told me that, so I asked why. She showed me a picture of him and said not to answer the door for him, don't let him in, and to not let him see the kids. I just said okay. I thought she was being dramatic, but I went along with it. After she left, the kids seemed harmless, so I told my girlfriend to come over. After that, there was a knock at the door. I figured it was her, so I opened the door. It was the ex-husband. This guy looked a lot scarier in real life than he did in the pictures. He towered over me with tattoos everywhere, including his neck, a bald head, and gold teeth. He asked to see his kids. I didn't know what to do, so I just told him, hold on, and I closed the door. I really didn't know what to do, so I called the woman and she didn't answer, so I texted her. Still nothing. Eventually, he started knocking on the door some more, but I would talk through the door, letting him know that I can't let him in, nor could I let the children out to see him due to the mother's request. He didn't like that too much. I stopped talking, then the knocking stopped. And the man said, okay. But it was an okay that sounded like he was going to get me back for not letting him in. I look outside and I see that he pulled off. I didn't call the police because he left. So my girlfriend texted me and it said she'll be there in 2 minutes. Then a few minutes go by and she isn't there yet. Then I see one of the twins looking out the window and he says, there's daddy. I look out the window and I saw the most disturbing thing you could think of. The man was on top of my girlfriend, stabbing her repeatedly in the side of her head with a screwdriver. Her body was shaking, but she wasn't making any noise. And there was blood everywhere all over her head, face, ground, and that man. I wanted to burst out of that door to help her, but I couldn't bring myself to do it. So I called the police. The man just stood there, staring at the house. He never tried to escape, just waited for the police as if he were crazy. The twins' mother and the cops showed up at the same time, and she was hysterical, going between Spanish and English while crying. I felt numb, guilty, and ashamed that I called my girlfriend over, and she was killed. And I was a coward that stayed in the house. Till this day, I still feel the guilt.
When I was 10 years old, I stayed at home by myself for the first time while my parents went out for a date. I was really into horror movies, so my imagination ran wild, so I had every light on in the house. I was scared, honestly, but not so much due to the lights. My parents told me they would be back by 10, so I wasn't really worried. I had food, Blockbuster movies to watch, and my favorite game, Manhunt, on my PS2. By the way, this was 2004. It started to get dark outside when all of a sudden a storm hit and the lights went out. As soon as it happened, I ran into our living room near the front of the house with my flashlight. I was definitely afraid now. I decided to get under the covers on the couch. I tried to fall asleep, but I was so afraid I couldn't. I don't know why, but I peeked out from under the covers and I swear I saw the silhouette of a man in the corner of the room. I jumped back under my covers, breathing heavily. Then all I heard was slow, methodical footsteps. They were coming toward me. Then I heard whispering along with the footsteps. My heart was pumping out of my chest at this point. Then the sound stopped. I just laid there frozen. No sound.
Go!
I got up and ran out of the house because it felt like someone touched my arm. And I know I heard someone yell the word go. I pretty much ran out of the house with the blanket over my head. I ran to my neighbor's house. I told them what happened and they called the cops from their cell phones. My parents arrived a little later than they expected due to bad traffic. They seemed angry about what happened. The police say that there was no evidence of a break-in. I still to this day remember that feeling of fear, but I really don't know if it were my imagination or not. About a year ago in my final semester in college, I worked at a department store in the mall. I didn't have a car yet, so I asked for the day shifts because it was a 2-hour bus ride back home. So basically, if I had a closing shift, I'd get done at 11 but not get home until around 1 a.m. But sometimes I'd be given a closing shift, much to my annoyance since I had class at 6 a.m. And my mother worries about me because who wants their kid on public transportation at night? My managers, being the jerks that they were, gave me a week of closing shifts, knowing my situation. I was pissed, but whatever. So one night, I had just finished my shift and I got on the bus. I sat in the middle of the bus and was minding my own business with my earbuds in. I usually did that because I didn't like people talking to me, so I made it look like I was listening to music. And I occupied myself by playing a crossword puzzle on my phone. About 5 seats behind me, I hear these guys speaking Spanish. Now, my mother is Dominican, but people never know that I am, so while I understand a fair bit of Spanish, I don't speak it. So I hear them talking, but I don't pay any attention because it's rude to eavesdrop. All until they say, "That kid in front of us." Then my ears perk up. I keep my earbuds in so that they think I can't hear them. And I continue to listen. What they're saying is horrific. To paraphrase it, they knew my stop because they've been watching me for this week. And to put it simply, they were planning on snatching me. I heard them say that I'll disappear like the others. I was about 20 minutes away from home, so I knew I had to act quickly. Since I knew they could see me, there were 5 seats behind me, but like a cross, if that makes sense. I pretended to play on my phone, oblivious while I was actually texting my mom. Then all of a sudden, one of the guys moved 3 seats ahead of me, and the other one moved about 3 seats behind me. And we're the last ones on the bus. I text my mom, "Can you please meet me at the bus stop?" 5 minutes go by, no answer. We're getting closer to my stop, so I decided to call her cell. No answer. I call the house phone, and she finally answers. At this point, it's about 12:30 a.m., so she was asleep. I try to talk as calmly as I can. This was our conversation. "Hey, Mom, did you get my text?" "No. What's up?" "Oh, I sent you a picture of these jeans I'm going to order online when I get home. I really need your opinion, so I really need you. Really need you to look, since the sale ends at 1 a.m. She gets the hint that I need her to look at her cell phone. So I say goodbye, and I hope for the best. I tied my Adidas very tight. We get to my stop, and I see my mom's car. I stand up. Then the man in front of me stands up. Then the guy behind me stands up. I snatch my stuff, and I sprint to the door, and I got off the bus, with both men behind me, both yelling at each other to grab me. I didn't even look behind me. My mom sees the whole thing and jumps out of the car. I yell at her to get back in the car because they couldn't catch me. A hard ass. I jump in the car and I tell my mom, "Just go." I look in the rearview and I see the guy staring at the car. The next morning,
I called my job and I tell them that I quit. No more public transportation for me. Thanks to my mom for teaching me Spanish. And thanks to my mom for getting the hint.
I'm an Irish female, and this happened back in 2007, when I was in my mid-20s. Back then, I loved going to clubs and dancing the night away. One particular night, I went out with some friends, which included my cousin Frank. We went to a nightclub, had some drinks, and danced to Daft Punk's One More Time, as well as other popular music at the time. I wasn't living in this town at the time, so I arranged to stay at Frank's house. We had the fridge stocked with beer for when we got back and planned on getting wasted. We probably left the club at around 1 a.m. and got a taxi to his house. Back at Frank's house, we spent a few hours listening to Led Zeppelin, Nirvana with a bit of Metallica thrown in for good measure. My cousin was in a rock band and loved the classics. At around 3 a.m., Frank's bandmate, Jack, called and asked if we could come over and stay. He had been clubbing at a different location and needed somewhere to crash. Frank lived alone in a three-bedroom house, and being a single guy, he hosted a few wild parties over the years. Frank told them no problem. He can come over, but explained we were having a quiet night. In other words, not to bring anyone else. Jack came over and seemed super friendly. Being the drummer of the band, he looked exactly like what I expected. Long hair, Zeppelin t-shirt, and ripped jeans. His behavior changed not long after arriving. He was super animated, and I don't know, just on a different buzz. He seemed drugged on something, and hey, as long as he enjoys himself, who am I to judge? At one stage, he started playing air drums, and continued with that for ages. During one of the air drum solos, I asked him something, and he didn't answer. I kind of nudged him, very lightly, but just to get his attention. Jack went crazy and started shouting at me to never interrupt him when he was playing drums. Drums? Sorry, did he really think he was playing real ones? Anyway, this pissed me off. I didn't like the aggression. Frank said, Relax, man. There's no need to shout. Jack replied, No one should interrupt me when I'm in the zone, man. No one. Me and Frank eye-rolled and carried on chatting, drinking, and ignoring him. The atmosphere changed after that, and after a short time, I went to bed. I don't know how long after, but I was awoken from a deep sleep. I heard this breathing sound in my room. Still in a drunken slumber, it took me a few minutes to register that the noise sounded like someone inhaling. Someone was in my bed, with a bunch of my hair in his hand, sniffing it. I froze, then said, What the fuck are you doing? Jack replied, Relax. I'm just smelling your hair. I'm not gonna do anything. Well, adrenaline coursed through me, but I was stuck to the bed with fear, and the room was pitch black. I shouted, Frank! At the top of my voice, and in speedy time, he ran in the room. Turned on the light, only to find Jack in my bed, holding a handful of my hair. He said, It's not what it looks like, bud. I was only smelling it. I was sleeping facing the door, so could see Frank. I dared not to look behind me to see Jack, but his voice sounded like that of a child that knows he's done something wrong and is about to get in trouble. Frank lost it, told him to get the fuck downstairs. My cousin apologized and said he did not want to kick him out of the house in the drugged-up state he was in. The door had no lock, so my cousin slept in a chair in front of my bedroom door. Jack actually tried to come in again. I woke to Frank telling him to get the hell back downstairs, or he was going to kick him out of the house. Jack retreated once again. The next day he was gone by the time I woke up. But a few days later, when Frank tracked Jack down, he was told he'd been mixing drugs with alcohol and was embarrassed by his behavior. Even though it's been years since it happened, It still gives me the creeps when I think about it. Those sniffing sounds, big, deep, slow inhales, still give me goosebumps. The band broke up not long after that, so I never had to meet him again. I was told he was a good guy, so he may have been on drugs that made him super strange. I'm just glad Frank was there, or who knows how I would have got him out of my room.
I was 10 at the time this happened. This event still gives me the creeps to this day. I had a friend come over for the night at my house. We ate some snacks, watched a movie on Netflix, and basically were having fun. After a few hours, we got bored and decided to do something different. My friend suggested that we should take two of my bikes and go explore their abandoned house nearby, for your understanding. If we would have walked there, we would have made it around 1 hour to the destination. If we would have taken the bikes, we would have made around 10 minutes. So we grabbed the bikes and rode till we reached the road to the house. We left our bikes at the entrance of the road. The house is on the left side of the road, heavily damaged, old, and creepy. On the right side of the road, there was what looked like a garage, full of what we thought were tools, no car. I agree with my friend that we should explore the house first, then the garage. I already thought we should go back home. Right when my friend put his hand on the door, I heard a thud in the distance. It was like someone or something hit a metallic plate with a pipe or a big branch. I asked my friend, "Did you hear that?" My friend said, "Hear what?" I let it pass. I was thinking probably my brain was tricking me. Plus, I was a bit sleepy. The door to the house was old and creaky. I'll never forget the moment my brain processed the smell coming from the house. It smelled like rotten eggs, alcohol, and old unused meat. At this point, it was pitch black outside. We were using the flashlights from our phones to see in the dark. It was hard to see. My brain was making images that seemed real, but they were not. The atmosphere in the house was like an ancient place, but at the same time, it felt cursed. We saw a kitchen, living room, a bathroom with a purple mattress that covered the entrance of the room, and some stairs that were probably leading to the basement. Not even a candle was inside. The smell was coming from the kitchen, but also from upstairs. A hallway separated the living room and the kitchen. It was straight and as long as the ground floor. Firstly, we checked the living room because it was nearest us. It was almost connected to the kitchen. We pointed our flashlights at the floor and it was covered by a purple carpet with small black dots on it. There wasn't really anything special in the living room except for a lamp. It had a note on it that said, "I'll be back soon. Prepare the sauce," with a smiley face at the end. The paper looked old, but the ink was fresh. Somehow, we didn't give it much attention. Big mistake. We went to the kitchen, opened the cupboards, and saw food. Bread, some salad, tomatoes, some kind of meat, what we thought to be steak, and it was bloody. The food seemed fresh, but the smell that got to us was mostly coming from the steak. We weren't that scared before, but the chills sneaked into us. I told my friend that we should return home, but he was a jackass and wanted to continue. Although I didn't want to explore anymore, I didn't have a problem with that, but two particular things made me want to go home. The idea of a crazy and dangerous homeless person that could have lived in there, in the basement. The walls from the start of the basement stairs were made out of concrete and nothing else. My friend was walking toward the basement. I grabbed him by his arm and told him I don't want to go down there. After 1 minute, I convinced him that we don't need to explore that part of the house, and we moved on. Behind the purple mattress in the bathroom, there were clothes thrown everywhere. Pants, shirts, hoodies. But the weirdest thing was a bathtub. A mannequin with green dyed hair. I told my friend that we should get the fuck out of here. That's when we heard a scream from outside. A scream that was coming from a man. We both ran to a window to see what was going on. And what I saw marked me for life. Outside was a person with a clown mask that was dragging a dead body with him. He was heading for a garage. We both whispered to each other. What should we do? I don't know. I think there were two of them. The other one must be in the garage. As we were talking, the man in the clown mask turned on the lights in the garage. At that point, we could have died of fear. What we saw as tools were actually tools for dismantling a human body. The clown picked up the tool and began to scoop the man's parts out. I almost puked. We called the police thinking no one can hear us.
They said to stay hidden until they arrived. We ran upstairs with no idea what was waiting for us there. Upstairs, there were four rooms, a bathroom and three bedrooms. We went into the first one that had a window. After minutes felt like hours, we heard the sirens of the police cars. I was so relieved when something happened. We heard a cracking voice saying, "Come out, come out. I have many toys you can play with." After that, we heard a door opening. Not from our room, from one of the other three. My friend tried to open the window quietly, but after one small move, he gave up because it was creaky. At that moment, the guy was knocking on the door. We heard the police say, "Put your hands in the air." Then an officer kicked down the front door. At the same time, the guy from our door started to scratch the door with something sharp. Then he broke into the room. I had no choice but to try to jump through the old window, which I did. I couldn't feel the pain because of the fear. I landed in some bushes, then started to run towards the police cars. Then I heard someone running in the back. I looked, and it was the clown that dragged the body. He was faster than me, but the police officer saw him and shot him in his right hand. Then I saw the other clown walking out of the house, cuffed, and with another officer behind him. I was worried sick for my friend. Then my friend walked out of the house with another officer. I was so glad we didn't get harmed. The cuffed clown was sent to prison and got a life sentence for serial murders, selling illegal things, stealing goods from people and breaking into houses. And yes, the steak we saw was human flesh. I never visited any abandoned house since.
When I was in high school, I lived in a small town in the Midwest. I worked at a historic but failing dual-screen theater. Unfortunately, the building itself was on its last leg, and the interior cosmetic renovations hadn't been made since the mid-80s, when a wall was built over the original stage and converted into a cinema. However, I adored the building, and was deeply saddened by its decrepit state. Many of the locals didn't care much for the theater once they started showing movies, and business dropped enormously from then to when I was employed there in 2007. Most of my shifts I barely saw more than a dozen people for each showing, if that. Some days we didn't even have a single person come in. My manager and I eventually became good friends, and he gave me a key to perform nightly janitorial duties. Needless to say, I was psyched. I loved the idea of coming in after hours to work and try to make the theater look more presentable, and not a typical smelly discount shithole. I would purchase cleaning supplies myself, and brought my mom's vacuum in because the theater didn't have one. I tried as much as a 17-year-old could to make the place more attractive, because it seemed everyone else gave up on her. One Friday night at around 12 a.m., I decided to borrow my uncle's steam cleaner to clean up the seats in the second theater. It was a lengthy task, but I had just got done smoking a joint with a buddy, and I had no issue finishing my night off listening to music and cleaning with a buzz. I entered the theater as usual and began completing petty tasks before tackling the big job. Eventually, I entered the second theater and experienced a very uneasy feeling. I have never felt uncomfortable in there before, but for some reason I couldn't shake this pressing feeling on my chest. I assumed I was a little panicky from the pot. I turned my music down and started getting to work to try and get my mind off it. I had my back facing the screen and was scrubbing the second-to-last row near the exit, when I suddenly heard a lot of rustling coming from behind the screen. This didn't come as much of a shock, considering that we've had pest issues in some of the storage rooms behind the screens. Thinking it was a raccoon trying to hide after hearing the drowning noise of my steam cleaner, I continued on, and didn't pay much mind to it, until the rustling became very distinct. Whatever the noise was coming from under the screen inside the large metal grate that leads to the stage behind the screen, and whatever it was big. I turned my cleaner off and stared at the grate, practically frozen in fear and continuing to reassure myself that it was a raccoon or maybe even a dog or something. The noise became more prominent, and after what seemed like hours of me just staring at the grate, trying to determine what the creature was, the metal grate made a slow and ominous screeching noise as it began to push out from the inside. I continued to stare in intense fear as I witnessed what came tumbling out. A nearly bald head with a couple of strands of gray dirty hair greeted me before an old naked woman, absolutely covered in dirt, insects, and blood, came crawling out on all fours and looked directly at me. She paused as she was fully out and forcefully grinning at me with her toothless mouth. I'm not sure how much time went by, but I honestly felt like my feet had melted into the floor. I truly thought I was hallucinating. The way she was positioned like that seemed unreal, and although I was terrified, I think I was more perplexed by her contour. I thought she was a character from Silent Hill I had hallucinated, and that I was tripping on some really bad weed. This is what was playing over and over again in my mind, until she started crawling very quickly towards me without saying a single word, maintaining her grin with her head cocked back and her sagging breasts bouncing back and forth, hitting her bloody arms and smearing dirt and blood together. At that moment I pissed myself and jumped over the last two rows of seats. I still can't believe I did that in one leap, and ran as fast as I could to the exit door. I could hear distant shuffling as I slammed the door behind me, locked it, and ran to the police station, which was a couple of buildings away. I gave them the key, called my manager, and told them I wasn't going back. The woman who crawled after me, according to the police, was a homeless schizophrenic meth addict who decided to take up residency under the screen after managing to enter through a small opening from the outside of the building. When they arrived, she was crawling around in circles in the lobby. It appeared to them that she had been staying there for at least a week to shoot up meth, and she more than likely watched me on my janitor days, grinning that toothless grin as I swept away, unaware of her being there. It was definitely the absolute scariest moment of my life, and needless to say, I stopped coming in by myself to clean up. Since then, the place has closed and is completely boarded up. I miss it greatly, but whenever I come back to the area, I still wonder if she's sleeping in there. In the summer of 2017, at around 8:30 p.m., I suddenly remembered that I needed to put some gas in my car, finishing the last paragraph of my essay. I called my parents to let them know that I would be gone for a few minutes, but that I was coming straight back. The gas station was about 10 minutes from my house, so I would have been back in about 20 minutes or so. I grabbed my keys and left without another word. After 10 minutes of driving, I arrived at the gas station and pulled up to the nearest pump. As I started pumping gas into my car, an old beat-up pickup truck appeared in the corner of my eye. I turned my head to look and noticed two dark figures just sitting there. I couldn't make out any distinguishing features, but they seemed to be talking while checking out the place. I brushed it off and finished filling my tank. Before I got back into my car, I decided to run into the building to grab some snacks for my boyfriend. I then walked inside and quickly picked out some items. Just as I was done making my purchase, two men wearing jeans with black hoodies burst into the store, guns drawn. Both of them appeared to be in their mid-20s and fairly built.
"Everybody get on the ground!"
the first man shouted. The cashier and everyone else in the store immediately obeyed his orders. There was a few panicked whispers until one of the men shouted at them to shut up. I felt my heart pick up its pace, and my blood ran cold. These men were about to rob this place, and possibly shoot up the customers or the cashier. I prayed silently to myself that no one would be killed or seriously injured. One of the men grabbed my hair.
"You, stand!"
he commanded. Fearing for my life, I did as he ordered. Almost immediately, I felt an arm snake around my wrist and take hold. I would have elbowed him, stomped his foot, or attempted to punch his face, but I was so paralyzed in fear to think or do anything. The worst part, I felt a gun aiming at the back of my head. I tried squirming away from the man's grip, but he just held me tighter and hissed at me.
"Stay still, sweetheart, and no one gets hurt."
The other man shouted at the cashier.
"Hand over the cash, or you're gonna be scraping this bitch's brains off the wall."
I had no connection with the cashier in any way, except for just being a customer at the store. but I could tell from the look in his eyes that he wanted to protect me in any way he could. He was an older guy, possibly in his 60s, with glasses on his face. I knew that he had no choice but to comply with their demands. He hastily unlocked the register. As he was handing over the cash, I felt the barrel of the gun press against the side of my head, and I nearly started to freak out. I restrained myself and just started to tear up a little. My throat burned from holding it back, all for the sake of keeping myself alive for as long as possible. Once every last dollar bill was in the man's hands, sirens blared from outside. The man then stuffed the money into a backpack, then punched out the cashier. I was then thrown to the side, my stomach and arm hitting the edge of the counter before I fell onto the floor. As soon as the two men ran outside, they were surrounded by police. Within seconds, they were tackled to the ground and handcuffed. I was still catching my breath, but I was more concerned about the cashier. I pulled myself up and peeked over the counter. For the most part, he seemed okay, although I could see his right eye was turning black. His glasses laid broken on the floor.
"Are you all right, sir?"
I weakly asked him, my stomach still hurting.
"I'm a little blind at the moment, but I'll be okay," he responded. "Is everyone all right?"
a familiar voice asked. One of the cops, who is also very good friends with my father, had entered the store.
"Just us two might need some attention," I said.
The officer turned towards us. He immediately recognized me and asked if I was okay. The cashier and I told him everything, as other cops eventually came in and questioned the other customers. It turns out that a customer had sneaked into the bathroom and called 911 without the robbers noticing. Once the questioning had finished, I just couldn't hold it in anymore. I burst into tears, not because I was in pain, but because I had just endured the scariest moment of my life. I just wanted to get home and put an ice pack on my stomach. The cashier was rushed down to the store on a stretcher. "Do you need any medical attention?" the officer asked. I shook my head and cried, "I just want to go home." As I walked out of the store, I noticed a few cops investigating the truck I had seen earlier. And then it clicked in my head. That vehicle belonged to the two men. They had been scoping out the place, waiting for the right time to strike. And I was pretty sure that I was the first person they saw to use as bait. A police car followed me home that night. I then made a promise to myself that I would never go certain places at night ever again. This happened to me back in the summer of 2018. Just thinking about it now still gives me chills to this day when I consider what could have happened to me that night. I'll start by giving a little backstory. I'm a 24-year-old male who lives in Minnesota. I was staying with a friend who lives in Chicago. We've been friends since sophomore year in college, so I was really looking forward to catching up with him since our departure after graduation. I was only visiting him for a week, and then I would be on my way home. During the evening, my friend, who we'll call Steven, and his mother went out to go get food, and I decided to stay behind for the simple fact that I just wanted to get settled in for the night. However, the house became extremely hot, so that's when I decided to get out of the house and go walk around the neighborhood. Now, something that you should know about me at this point is that I'm a frequent walker, especially at night. It really calms my nerves whenever I'm on edge, or when I just need to get away for a while. I'm a really antisocial guy in a way. After about 10 minutes of walking, I came across the neighborhood park, and just to kill some time, I decided to go explore it. This park was massive. There was a baseball field enclosed by a walking trail that went on for about a mile, and there was also a small basketball court. In the distance, I could also see a small playground area for children, along with a dimly lit bathroom that you would typically see at any community park. The creepiest part was the trees that surrounded the area. Even though it was a park, it kind of put you in the state of mind that you were standing in the middle of a forest preserve. I didn't have any fears about walking around this park at night, because Steven always assured me that his neighborhood was safe for the most part. "Nothing ever happens here," he would always say. But he was mistaken. I decided to keep walking, and I eventually came across a small park bench. So I decided to sit down and enjoy the night breeze for a little bit. I was at peace when I suddenly heard a rustling noise coming from the nearby trees. I quickly turned around, and there was nothing there. Might have been the wind, a bird, or maybe a squirrel, I thought. After about 5 minutes of relaxing, I pull out my phone to see a text from Steven. It read, "Hey, we just got back. Where are you?" I was about to respond when I looked up to see a car pull in near the playground a few yards away from where I was sitting. This was pretty odd, seeing how it was about 9:30 p.m. But I didn't know much about this area, so I dismissed it as being completely normal. A few minutes go by, and I thought that someone would exit the car, but they didn't. It was at this point that I started to feel a little on edge. The headlights were irritating me, so I got up and started walking back to Steven's house. I texted him saying, "I'm on my way back from the park." In that moment, I heard a car door slam behind me, and I looked back to see a very large man. He was standing in front of his car, and it looked like he was staring right at me. Now keep in mind, it was pretty dark at this point, so I can't really describe any of his facial features. I began walking again, picking up my pace and looking behind me every few seconds. The man was now following me, and I was growing paranoid. "I don't want to die tonight," I thought to myself. Suddenly, I noticed out of the corner of my eye, two men emerged from the trees in the darkness. I was almost at the entrance of the playground when I heard, "Hey, sexy, come here a minute. You want to have some fun tonight?" I was scared shitless at this point. Adrenaline started to kick in, and to this day, I still believe I did one of the stupidest things I've ever done. I turned around to face the men head on and yelled, "Fuck off. I'm not in the mood for games tonight." At that moment, a large hand covered my mouth from behind, and it was suddenly harder to breathe. I tried to scream, but the gloved hands just held me tighter. I started to feel lightheaded, and everything turned blurry. I then blacked out. I woke up in a car, still feeling lightheaded. My hands were tied, and my belt was unbuckled. I immediately noticed that all four of the car seats had men in them, and I was sandwiched between two of them in the back seat. "What's going on?" I said in a hoarse voice. "We're going for a ride," the driver said. I felt weak and sluggish as I desperately tried to move my body, but a sharp blow to the side from one of the men sitting beside me stopped me in my tracks. There was no way I could fight four guys bigger than me. I started begging for them to let me go, and they responded by just laughing at me. Tears ran down my face as I struggled to get my hands free, but it was useless. I felt nothing but fear and anger and overall embarrassment. The car started to back out of the parking lot, when suddenly there was the sound of the back window glass breaking. Three of the men immediately got out of the car to check it out.
"What the hell just happened?"
one of them yelled.
"You sickos, let him go now!"
I recognized the second voice as Steven. With the car doors open, I took the opportunity to escape. Desperately stumbling onto the pavement, I looked up to see Steven holding a rock in one hand and a tree branch in the other.
"I already called the police on you fuckers,"
he said. I started to gather my strength and joined my friend in the standoff. We were outnumbered, but I wasn't going to let him fight these men on his own. He was like a brother to me, and where I come from, you protect your family. In the distance, we heard the sound of sirens. The men quickly hopped back in the vehicle and booked it out of there fast. I immediately noticed the car didn't have any license plate. I'll skip through the police details, because it was just the usual. They took my statement and told me that they would let me know if anything happens. The week passed without further incident. The day that I was getting ready to go back to Minnesota, I was trying to block out everything that happened as best as I could, when Steven said,
"You could have been Michael."
"Who's Michael?" I asked. He then told me that when he was in middle school, he had a friend named Michael. They used to play together all the time at that playground. One day a stranger approached them. The man claimed to be a friend of Michael's dad. To make a long story short, he never saw that man, or his friend Michael, ever again. This happened to me when I was in 11th grade. I'm a female, and I tend to be a people pleaser. I never like to call anyone out, reject anyone outright, or act like someone is being weird. I'm also a bit open-minded, and I tend to go with the flow. School started in early September, and in my marine biology class, I noticed that there was this boy that kept staring at me from the corner of my eye. I just made one of those half smiles towards him to acknowledge him and went on about my assignment. I really did not think much of it for a couple of weeks, even though he continued to stare. He was very skinny and tall, had brown hair. His eyes were so brown that they looked black. He had a generally nondescript face, other than his super dark eyes. One day he decided to say hi. I said hello back to him, and he told me his name, which was Alex. I told him mine, but he said that he already knew my name. That wasn't a surprise, as I have rather large handwriting, and he could have easily watched me write my name down on one of my papers, since he was staring at me so much. It was kind of odd that he didn't really have any facial expression when he flatly said that he knew my name. I just sort of laughed it off, said, "Oh, okay," and began putting my things in my bag as the bell was about to ring. I only had a few friends, and we always sat at the same table during lunch. We were all rather quiet, and most times read while we ate. That means I usually don't look around the lunchroom, as I have my eyes in my book. This day, my friend finished her novel, so I decided to put mine away and just talk. I immediately noticed Alex staring inside at us from the courtyard tables. He never seemed to be embarrassed that I noticed him. I showed him to my friend and told her about my class with him. She found it to be super creepy, but I said he's probably harmless and was just socially awkward. I arrived in marine biology a little early later that day, and so it was just myself, Alex, and one other girl for about 10 minutes. I did that half smile at Alex, and then decided to break out my book and start reading again. He had his hands folded over his mouth, and was staring again. This time, it just felt awkward, because we were basically alone now. I glanced over at him, and kind of raised my eyebrows, as if to say, "Yes?" He looked me up and down very slowly, and I asked him if he was okay. He said yes, and that he was just inside of his head, thinking, "Okay, whatever, that's fine." The next day at lunch, there was a little piece of paper on the table that we sat at. It had my name on the front. Not just my first name, my first and middle name. I opened it, and it said something like, "I wonder what your asshole would look like with a PVC pipe shoved up it." What the fuck? I looked around. I didn't see Alex, but I immediately knew it was him. I was very scared to come to class later that day, but he wasn't there. I felt a lot better about not seeing him. The note itself was gross and embarrassing. I didn't want to show any administrators because of that, so I just threw it out. I went to the bus area at the end of the day, like usual, but this time, I noticed Alex leaning on one of the pillars with his backpack on one shoulder. I literally felt chills down my spine when I noticed a white PVC pipe poking out of the top of his backpack through the zippers. I didn't give him any reaction to my knowledge, even though I'm sure he had watched me read the note. The next morning, I made an appointment with a counselor and had my class changed. She was very reluctant to do that for me, because we were already in the school year well over a month and a half, but I think since I have a history of good grades and behavior, She helped me out. I spent the rest of the year avidly avoiding him. He kept staring at me at lunchtime, and one time, he took photos of me at the bus area without my consent. Even though it was against school policy, I got some pepper spray for when I get off at my bus stop. I have no clue what happened to him, because when 12th grade began, he was no longer at our school. I'm not sure if I even want to know how he turned out.
When I was 22, I moved 1,000 miles away from my Midwest home to the beautiful foothills of Tennessee. I had a new job, new car, and a nice apartment, but didn't know a soul outside of work. If my phone rang, I expected to hear a faraway family member or my long-distance boyfriend, who was still in college. This was a landline, no cell phones yet. Despite being very alone, I was managing well with the excitement of all the new things in my life. I had only lived there about 2 weeks when the unwanted calls started. The first call, a man's friendly voice asked what I was doing. I couldn't place him and thought maybe it was one of my cousins or uncles. I have a huge extended family. I ask him his name, he laughs a little, and his tone gets dark, a bit angry, and he says,
"You know exactly who this is, darling."
I pause, deciding if this guy simply called the wrong number or is a creep. I choose the former, laugh, and politely tell him he has the wrong number. He then recites my brand new, unlisted, unpublished phone number and my name. What the fuck, I thought. An intense chill races through me. I've only given my new number to my parents, sister, boyfriend, apartment manager, and employer. I'm new to the city in this lovely southern state. He does not like it that I tell him he called the wrong number and starts yelling at me, then tells me in a much calmer voice the many vulgar things he's going to do to me. I hang up and brush it off. He calls again around 1 a.m. I tell him to screw himself and hang up. He keeps calling, so I unplug the phone and return to sleep. However, as days go by, the calls continue and escalate. He starts mentioning personal things about me, said he liked the white quilt on my bed, knew what was in my fridge, that he's allergic to cats, I had one, and then asked me if I was in love with Mary. As I listened to his words, I was standing in my kitchen looking at the calendar taped to the fridge. It had Mary written in pink on the 17th with a heart around it, because Mary is my sister and the 17th is her birthday. I started shaking and crying, because suddenly I realized this creep has been in my apartment. I was alone, with no friends or family to run to for the night. It was me versus a creepy mystery man. I didn't sleep much that night. Early the next morning, I talked to the apartment complex manager before heading to work, telling her what had happened and that I want the locks changed that day. She gets a weird look on her face, and after a long pause, says she knows who's been in my apartment and that it won't happen again. What? I thought to myself. It turns out she had a creepy, rapey maintenance guy who noticed a young woman moving into an apartment alone and that I was his new pet. She had the locks changed immediately and promised that she would personally keep the other key. Although the calls stopped, I was paranoid for a year as I came and went from my apartment because I never even knew what this guy looked like. I moved out the moment my lease was up. Only after thinking about it years later did I realize that her weird expression likely meant that it had happened before. Plus, she didn't even fire him. I regret not calling the cops. I was young and naive.
This happened to myself and a friend of mine. We're both 23-year-old males. We decided to go on a two-night backpacking camping trip to the Adirondack Mountains of New York. We are both very comfortable with nature and spend a lot of time outside hunting, camping, and fishing. We hiked about 5 miles to get to a small lake so we could set up camp on the beach. We didn't really expect to run into anyone else. Our first night there, as we were sitting around the fire, we saw a flashlight moving on the other side of the lake around 10:30. This was fairly unusual. However, we did not think much of it. But as time went on, This flashlight kept moving around the lake, getting closer to our campsite. We kept discussing who could possibly be wandering around the woods in the middle of the night. We did not want to deal with any unwelcome guests. Once it was clear that the person, or people, were heading for our campsite, we moved off into the nearby woods to see who wandered up. I took a small axe with me and my friend had a .22 rifle. Now, we weren't expecting any trouble, and we certainly didn't want to make any, but we figured we might as well cover our bases. Now, the moment of truth. The flashlight comes near the light of our fire, and it's one man. He has a beard and was probably in his mid-40s. The scary part was that he was carrying what turned out to be a pump-action shotgun. He walked around our campsite a few times, and then proceeded to enter our tent. After rummaging around for about a minute, he came out and started yelling,
"I know you're out there. Why don't you come and say hello?"
My friend and I remained motionless under a hemlock tree about 50 yards away. That's when the man proceeded to fire his shotgun into the woods, not too far from where we were. He also swung his flashlight around several times. After what felt like hours, he grabbed my friend's backpack and a few articles of clothing that we had drying near the fire and threw them in to burn. My friend had the .22 rifle trained at the man. He asked me if he should shoot. I told him absolutely not, unless he spots us and starts pointing the gun in our direction. Thankfully, the man moved off after a while. We waited until his flashlight was on the other side of the lake. Then we ran out and grabbed everything we could fit in my pack and took off. It was now 2 or 3 a.m. We ran out the trail with our flashlights and made it back to my car as the sun was coming up. We immediately went to the police department and reported it, where we also spoke with some forest rangers. And that was it. I still haven't heard anything back from the police, and this experience creeped the hell out of both of us.
Back when I was 17, I used to babysit for our neighbor, who at the time was a single mother who happened to be going through a particularly nasty divorce. She had two young sons, one of which was 8 years old, while the other was only around 18 months. They were absolutely adorable and very well-behaved kids, but you could tell that they were going through a lot, and the older one definitely showed signs of stress over the whole thing. And I'll never forget the time he asked me why his daddy couldn't live with them anymore, and it honestly broke my heart. Not because I didn't have an answer for him, but because to hear it would have just been too much to bear. Too much for anyone to bear. Anyway, after a few months of being alone, she finally decided to get back on the old dating horse. I was so happy for her. After such a rough time, she deserved to find happiness again, to find someone who had the wherewithal to be a real father to these two adorable little boys. So one night she leaves on her date and says she'll be back around midnight and not a moment later. Only she doesn't tell me exactly where she's going, and I have no way to contact her because this was back in the 80s and no one had a cell phone. Well, they did exist, but not in the available commercial sense. It was all landlines back then. Otherwise, this might not have gone the way it did. So on the night in question, I'm chilling on the couch, absent-mindedly flicking through the TV channels. I put the kids to bed an hour previous. They're sleeping like rocks, and everything seems fine and dandy. When suddenly there's a knock at the front door. I wasn't expecting anyone, but then again, it wasn't my house, so I felt kind of obligated to answer and take a message or whatever. Only as I started walking down the hallway towards the front door, whoever is on the other side starts banging against it and cursing up a storm.
"Cheryl, I know you're in there. Open the door."
Now, what was exactly said, I don't remember, but I'm not keen on repeating some of the words they used. It was really, really harsh. So I'm just frozen, looking at the door in total fright when the oldest boy came flying out of his room and down the stairs, running to the door and yelling, "Daddy's home." I grab him, pull him away from the door. I had no idea what this guy's intentions were, and after all, they were probably divorced for a freaking reason. But I almost fainted with fear when I hear the words,
"I got my shotgun in my truck, and tonight I'm going to teach you a lesson you'll never forget."
He screams this, but then I hear his footsteps move up the gravel path. It appeared he wasn't bluffing at all. And if that was the case, then our lives were clearly in danger. When he gets back, he's banging on the door and threatening to start shooting through it if no one opens. I grab both kids and run out the back door and across the street to my house where my mom calls the police. When the police arrive a few minutes later, they actually find the ex-husband taking a massive dump on Cheryl's porch. He was arrested, and I wait with the kids at my house for their mom to show up. Everyone was in tears by that point, even my mom, who was normally a pretty reserved woman. I mean, maybe he was just having a manic episode and no one was in real danger, but honestly, it was one of the most terrifying nights of my entire life.
After high school many years ago, I was in a bad place. My guardian had kicked me out after graduation. She didn't even help me find a place to stay, so I ended up living in my car for a couple of months. I met some heavy metal dudes at work one day. I had seen them around town, and all of my other friends seemed to know who they were. Everyone loved them. We became friends over a couple of months, and they offered for me to move in with them. I agreed. Looking back now, I wish I had just stayed in my car. My two main roommates were brothers, named Andrew and Seth. They were both in a band. They also believed in the occult and anything of that sort. I never really believed in that stuff, but I'm not one to tell someone what they should and shouldn't believe. They had let me live with them rent-free for several months after all, so who was I to complain? Being the only female in a house full of young men, though, I was always looking over my shoulder. You never know who you can trust. Turns out I was right to worry. Over time, their friends started to stay with us for longer periods of time, sometimes weeks. Their friends were another group of brothers that they had gone to school with. There were five in total, but only two stayed with us consistently. The younger brother, Mark, was very polite. He cleaned up after himself and always helped with the household chores. The other brother, Adam, though, he had a laundry list of mental problems. He had apparently done some bad drugs back in the day, and it had developed into what seemed like psychosis of the religious sort. He had done time in prison for assaulting a woman with a Bible. He would often look you in the eyes and tell you he could see how you would die. Once he even told me that I was possessed by a demon and that I needed my soul cleansed. Everyone in the house knew he had these problems, but he was their friend. They helped him through the hard times and gave him a place to stay. Otherwise, he would be out on the streets. I was always on guard around him after the things he would tell me. No one else seemed to be as concerned as I was, though. They should have been. One day, I was sleeping and my phone suddenly rang. It was my boss. He asked if I could come into work an hour early. It was only 12 p.m. I was broke and I had nothing better to do, so I said yes. I got up and began getting ready to leave. I walked out into the living room to see Mark and Andrew sitting on the couch, while Adam sat on the floor by the TV. He was watching scripture videos on YouTube, some real end-of-days type shit. That was a fairly common occurrence, so I went about my business as usual. I said goodbye to them and left for work. My shift at work was almost complete when my phone rang. My boss answered, handed it over to me, and said, "For you." I was just a cashier at the place, so I assumed it was a friend that couldn't reach me on the phone. I answered, and heard a man's voice that I didn't recognize. "Hi, this is Detective Williams. Something happened at your apartment today, and we need you to come into the station to talk about it." I left work immediately. I had assumed one of the brothers had been arrested for drug dealing or something. I was very wrong. I got to the station and was buzzed in. An officer escorted me to a small, cold room with a camera. He gave me a bottle of water and left me by myself for about 30 minutes. My mind was racing, thinking about what could have happened. He came back in and informed me that Adam had stabbed and killed Andrew at around 1 p.m.
I was shocked. I had just left the house only an hour before it happened, and everything had seemed completely normal. I asked if there had been a fight. The detective informed me that there hadn't been a struggle at all. It seemed to have just happened out of nowhere. I gave my statement to the police and left with nowhere to go, still in shock and confused out of my mind. Our apartment was a crime scene, so I went to another friend's house to watch the news report. The police refused to give me any information on the case. Over the next couple of days, the information began to be released. Adam hadn't just stabbed Andrew once, not twice, but stabbed him over and over, and even nearly decapitated him. After the murder, he ran down the road still holding the weapon. He called 911 and informed them what he had done. I watched the news report in horror. We had known he was unstable, but this? He had fully confessed to the brutal murder and provided police with his notebooks. He had apparently been planning to murder all of his brothers, my roommates, and me. He thought that we were possessed by demons and that this was the only way to free us. Luckily, none of his other intended victims were there at the time. Mark unfortunately witnessed the murder, but luckily he managed to escape. If I hadn't gotten that call from my boss, I wouldn't be alive today.
This all started about a year ago. I, a 23-year-old female, live on the second floor of an apartment complex and have lived here my entire life. The building is mostly comprised of families with young children and married couples. A lot of the families have lived here as long as my family has, so everyone knows each other pretty well. There is only one apartment unit that isn't occupied by a family, but rather by a pair of brothers who keep to themselves. One day, one of their sons, around my age, appeared out of the blue. He was strange off the bat. He would always wear a sweatshirt with the hood up and would run through the apartment complex to get to his apartment. I'm not sure what his face looks like because he always had the hood over his face. He lived on the first floor, on the back side of the complex, and would often go into his place by jumping through the window. He basically did everything in his power to avoid any interaction. I didn't mind him because I never saw him due to my busy schedule. However, one day, he started sitting on the top of the staircase that leads to my apartment. This was strange because his apartment unit was on the other side of the complex and on the first floor. I brushed it off at first, but it started happening every day. When I would come home from school, he was there. When my boyfriend at the time would drop me off at night, typically at around 10:30 to 11, he would be there. Sometimes, when I would leave and come back hours later, he would still be in the exact same spot as if he didn't move through the 5+ hours I was gone. At this point, I told my parents and my boyfriend about it, and they became very vigilant. My boyfriend would park his car and walk me to my door every night he dropped me off. Once he saw my boyfriend, he stopped sitting on the staircase, and I thought it was over, but it wasn't. He started waiting for me at the bus stop. The bus I take home from school stops right across from the street from my home, so it's a short walk. One day when I was getting off, I saw him waiting at the bus stop. Once he saw me get off, he followed me into the complex and sat on the staircase. He also started following me when I would walk my dog. At this point, my parents were upset. My dog started letting the neighbors know he was following me around. My neighbors started making sure he wasn't bothering me. If I was alone, they would start a conversation with me until I got into my door. One day, I got a friend request on Facebook from this guy. Mind you, he had never spoken a word to me, so how did he know my name, let alone find me on Facebook? My mom tried talking to his father, but they would never answer the door when my mom knocked on their door. So I'm thinking, it can't possibly get any worse, right? He seemed harmless, so I wasn't too worried. And I was wrong. One day when I returned from my boyfriend's house, my mom told me she had something to tell me, but she didn't want me to get spooked. She proceeded to tell me that when she was walking towards the kitchen to get a glass of water, she saw something in the tree move. Our kitchen has a huge window that takes up most of the wall. In front of the window, there's a huge tree. If someone were to climb the tree, you could see into our apartment. Well, guess what? When my mom took a closer look, she realized my neighbor was sitting in the tree, looking straight into the apartment. My mom called my dad over, and when my neighbor saw my dad, he jumped off the tree. At that moment, I felt my peace stolen from me. We filed a police report, but when the police went looking for him, he was gone. It turned out that there were snack wrappers and a blanket hidden in between the leaves of the tree. The police think that wasn't the first time he was up in that J-tree. I couldn't help but wonder how many times he saw me walking around, and I had no idea. It's been about 6 months, and I haven't seen him since. His father still lives in the complex, but there's been no sight of him. The police haven't been able to find him, so I have no idea what happened to him, but I just hope we never meet again.
This story isn't about me, but a coworker I work with. I work at a TGI Fridays as a waiter. There's this one girl I work with. We'll call her Beth. Beth was a nice girl. If I had to rate her, which I usually don't because every guy has a different taste and beauty is in the eye of the beholder, on a scale of 10, she was a good 7 or 8. So it was pretty obvious she was going to get a lot of attention from our customers. However, when I would greet our customers at the door and show them to our table, there was this one guy who would always ask for Beth. At first, I was okay with it because the customer is always right. And also because there were customers who would prefer me over other waiters as well. So I went to get Beth, and she waited him. This was normal. For the first few days, he would come back around the same time for lunch, and I found this normal too, because many people have their favorite places where they eat lunch. After a while, the other waiters and waitresses and I began teasing her about her new boyfriend. Beth would wait on him like she always did, but now he would come in more than once a day. Beth began to feel uncomfortable with it. She would tell me how he would try to make small talk and flirt with her, and even gave her his phone number. I laughed because it was funny as hell. The whole conversation went over my head, and I told her to just ignore it and take advantage of it because he was giving her pretty hefty tips every time. That was bad advice on my part, because she took it, and it only got worse. After a couple of months, I got a new work schedule because I had more free time and was able to work more. I began to work from 6 to closing time, which was around 2 a.m. It was probably the best work schedule I ever had because most of the people I talked to at work worked those same hours, including Beth, who also worked from 6 to close. Also because usually after 12 a.m., no one showed up, and the manager would either close early or we would just hang out and eat free food until closing time. So closing was fun. But one of our coworkers noticed that there was always a dude waiting outside near a 7-Eleven every day, and sometimes he would be in this blue Civic. Beth, a couple of waiters and I knew who he was right away, and we filled each other in on who he was. Needless to say, Beth was really scared at this point. Being friends, we decided to help out in any way possible. The days where she didn't have a car, I or someone else would offer to drive her home. The days where she did, one of us would walk her to her car, and man, that was the right thing to do. One day when I was walking to my car, this guy came up to me. He introduced himself and asked me a couple of questions. One was if there was a job available. I told him how to apply, and that I would tell him if there was a spot open. The other question, however, set off a red flag in my head. He asked me if Beth had a boyfriend, and began talking about her and how gorgeous she was, and how he wanted to get to know her, etc. I laughed and told him, a girl like her probably has a lot of suitors waiting, and she already has one. Not the best response. I texted her about my encounter, and that only contributed to her fear. It got worse. One day she forgot to ask somebody to walk with her to her car, and she went alone. But I ended up following behind, just in case something happened. I followed about 10 steps behind. I watched her get into her car. As I got into my car, I noticed out of the corner of my eye, the blue Civic. She pulled out of the parking lot, and everything seemed normal. but he pulled out and started following her, and so did I. I followed far behind so that he wouldn't notice me. The stalker followed her all the way to her house. I texted her to tell her to take the extra long way home, because she was being followed, and so that I could end up at her house first. She did, and when she pulled up and saw the blue Civic passed by, she was in tears. She hugged me and thanked me for saving her life. I went back to my car and stayed for 30 minutes, just in case, but the guy never came back. My friend Beth still works at TGI Fridays, but not at 6 to close anymore, and the creepy guy stopped showing up after a while too, and I can only hope it stays that way.
This incident took place in my old house in the winter of 2013. Me being 12 years old, my mom had gone on a vacation to visit her friend in Bakersfield, California, leaving us home alone. My sister Aurora, who was the oldest at 21, would be watching us, as well as my brother Austin, 19 back then. Austin and Aurora had come back from the local gas station to grab some snacks, hot dogs, hamburgers, slushies, candy, and chips, and as well as Austin getting a pizza from Little Caesars, as we were going to watch a football game that night. It was December 15th, 2013, when it was pitch black out, the game being either the third or fourth quarter. Even over the commentator and the loud sounds coming from the TV, we could hear a faint, yet very slight scratching sound coming from the garage. It sounded like our cats were scratching the wood on the garage, or maybe one of the dogs. Addison, my little sister, was looking around for the dogs and cats when she found them in the basement all resting in either our billet room or the two bedrooms we had down there. Addison came upstairs and told us, and we were pretty reasonably shaken. The scratching continued, and it only made us feel more unsettled. Austin and Aurora looked pretty shaken when we heard a loud collapsing sound in the garage. It sounded like someone climbed up the ladder to our storage area, went through all of our boxes, and shuffled them around. It was when it hit us. Bailey, my other sister, turned off the TV, while Allie, another one of my sisters, went to go turn off the lights. Addison hid in one of my basement bedrooms. Allie hid behind the china cabinet in our other basement bedroom. I was hiding under my bed. Aurora and Bailey were hiding behind my parents' bed. Then someone opened the door to our house and slammed it shut. It was a man. The man said in a gruff voice, walking into the bedrooms,
"Aurora, Austin, Allie, Bailey, Elijah, Addison, I would like to give you some candy."
He also said our full names at one point, and somehow knew our middle names. The man started pounding on the three-bedroom doors and screaming that he had a bunch of candy canes, and he just wanted to spread the Christmas cheer. Austin jumped on the man from behind, and he actually had a huge kitchen knife. Austin managed to stop him from stabbing or cutting him. The cops arrived a minute later, and the man was still in Austin's possession. Austin had left him for maybe 20 seconds, and when he went back in the hallway, the man was gone. We heard the front door shut, and Austin never caught the guy. Unfortunately, however, the story doesn't even end yet. One day, when I was 15, I was walking home from school with Addison and Bailey. Aurora and Austin and Allie had all moved out by then. I opened the front door to see everything shifted around, and the whole house was trashed. We found this incredibly odd, and even more that it was a terrible foul smell coming from our basement. And five of our dogs, Rocky, Roscoe, Petey, Coco, and Bingo, were all clawing at the basement door. I opened the door. Since Rocky, Coco, Bingo were all German Shepherds, they weren't scared, as Petey and Roscoe were golden retrievers and they were petrified. Rocky went down first. He was acting very brave, and then looked in the basement bedrooms and started barking. Our basement bedrooms are like this. One is off in the billet room, and there's a door at the back of the room leading to another basement bedroom. One was our guest room / office, and the other room was a storage room that was formerly our playroom. But Rocky was actually barking into our storage room. Bailey and Addison were upstairs cowering, while me and Rocky were downstairs in the storage room scavenging around the room. I turned on the fan and the light. Then I hear, "Elijah, come down here, please." I jumped, and a man from that one night in December stood up with a knife. Rocky pinned the guy to the floor, biting him profusely. I screamed for Addison or Bailey to call the cops, and they arrived in 5 minutes while Rocky was on top of the man. He was arrested and had been responsible for several crimes. I had forgotten about both incidents for a while, and we actually moved out of that house a few days ago, which was June 11, 2020. And when we were actually looking at the house for a last look, Bailey looked at the wall behind the china cabinet in the guest room and screamed. There was old carved blood into the wall that said, "I will come back." I will forever be grateful toward Rocky and Austin, both saving our lives. And Coco unfortunately died in August 2017 due to lymphoma. This incident will forever haunt me, and I hope we never see that man again. And I fear he will come to our new house, and he was sentenced to 12 years.
This all happened back when I was about 10 or 11, as it was the last year of primary school for me, and I remember being really excited about going to big school, as my mom and dad phrased it. They were off to some work function, and I needed a babysitter. I distinctly remember them being worried that they wouldn't be able to go, as I think they left it quite late and were worried that they wouldn't be able to find a sitter. I didn't want to be left alone with a stranger, so I remember being absolutely gutted when they said they'd managed to find someone to stay for a few hours on a Saturday evening. But when the time came and the babysitter arrived, I remember thinking that it wouldn't be so bad. She was very pretty and seemed genuinely lovely, some university student called Sarah, I can't quite remember, but she pretty much won my parents over in the first few minutes, and well, since they liked her so much, I kind of liked her, too. She told me we'd have a little slumber party, that we could watch my favorite film, and my parents sweetened the deal by saying that they'd leave us money for some pizza. So I really did perk up for a bit as they showed the girl around the house and actually warmed up to the idea as they left the house. Sarah, who we'll just call her now for the story's sake, she began to order us pizza. Only that's when things started to get a bit weird. She asked me what my favorite topping was, in a voice that didn't sound nearly as jolly as before. When I told her I liked pepperoni the most, still my favorite, she just laughed and told me she was a vegetarian. I tried to tell her we could always get two smaller pizzas, but she just ignored me as she placed an order for a large spicy veggie one. I hated spice, and I still do. I can't handle chilies for the life of me, even as a grown-up, so the younger me was absolutely heartbroken that I'd been pretty much shut out of the pizza party that we were supposed to be throwing. And it all went downhill from there. There was a knock at the door a little while after she called, and I suspected it was the delivery guy, but it wasn't. From the top of the stairs, I watched as some lad in his own clothes stepped out of the cold and into our hallway. I was confused as to what was going on, where the pizza was and all that, but when the pair of them started sharing this really horrible wet kiss, I got onto the fact that it was obviously her boyfriend or something. And this is all after hearing my parents make it clear to her that she wasn't allowed any company around. So I was really bloody annoyed at this point, like, furious. So I snuck down into the kitchen to try and find the house phone to call my mom, only it wasn't in the charger. I trot around for a wee bit trying to find the thing when I realize there's a good chance the babysitter had it with her. I walked down the hall to the living room where she and her boyfriend were, open the door, and pretty much recoil at what I see. They're doing stuff, right there on the couch. Sarah screams at me to get out and shuts the door, and I respond with asking her for the phone. She doesn't even acknowledge my request, gets up from the couch with fury in her eyes and slams the door on me before screaming through the wood to get back up to my room and be quiet. I told her I was hungry, but again, absolutely no acknowledgement. So I went back up to my room and just bawled my eyes out. So it's pretty important to remember that this was like the mid-90s, back when the internet or mobile phones weren't exactly available or affordable for a family like mine. If this had happened nowadays, it would be a piece of pie to just phone my parents or, hey, even take a photo of the boyfriend being there, and that would be that. But I just didn't have those options available to me, and even if I had, this girl was so conniving that she'd probably have found a way around it. But that sort of maltreatment wasn't what scared me. Yeah, it was upsetting, but another danger became more of a priority when I realized that they had trapped the family dog inside the living room with them. I went back downstairs facing my fears and hoping I could at least get Jazz out of the room with them. She was an Australian Shepherd, one of those dogs that's dead shaggy but also looks like someone spilled a can of paint over them or something. I loved her so, so much, and I had to rescue her. So I knock on the living room door, only to get told to go away. I knock again, telling the babysitter that it was important that Jazz had to go outside to have a wee or for her to be taken on a walk so she could do a number two. Again, she barked at me to go away. I wasn't about to let this happen to my best friend in the world, though, so I pushed the door open just in time to see the boyfriend do something frankly unbelievable. So in England, we play cricket, don't we? And the balls are insanely hard. Like, I think they might be even harder than baseballs you Americans play with. Solid cork on the inside with a tough leather binding. People actually died from getting hit on the head with cricket balls. Jazz loved her cricket ball. We tried throwing tennis balls and stuff for her, but I think she just liked that leather smell the cricket ball gave off. Maybe it reminded her of actually chasing an animal or something. I don't know. But either way, I opened the door of the living room to find the boyfriend of the sitter just lashing the cricket ball at Jazz. So hard that when it hit her back leg, she yelped, all high-pitched. I tried to run in to rescue her, to pull her into my room where she could be safe, but the boyfriend was fast. He pushed me back into the hallway, shut the door, and then I'm certain he wedged something against it, because I couldn't open it at all from then on. I went up to my room and cried myself to sleep, only waking up to hear my parents talking to the sitter when they got home. I didn't make a sound. I was just too scared. For some reason, I had it in my head that the boyfriend would hurt them. I don't know. Kids are daft like that, I suppose, but of course, he wasn't there. He left before my mom and dad got home. I think the real nightmare was that the sitter had actually spun some pure sob story about how I'd been really bad and terribly behaved all evening, how I'd been a brat and demanded this, that, and the other, and they made a huge bloody mistake, the absolute wankers, because that cricket ball had left a huge welt on Jazz's hind leg, and when my dad found out that, I'd at least been partially telling the truth about what they'd been up to. And God, you should have seen how livid he was. I won't bore you with the petty details, but let's just say that that sitter and her boyfriend ended up actually getting arrested on animal cruelty charges, and I know for a fact that he ended up getting convicted and fined for it. So, I suppose a silver lining to a truly terrible night, but be careful who you're hiring to sit your kids, people. Like all women, I have a fair amount of creepy experiences with men. I have a whole host of stories I could tell here, but one of my more memorable stories happened when I was a student. For context, I went to university in France and spent a few months doing an internship in Paris, where this encounter took place. I was only 20 years old, and so, it being a Friday night, I was on my way to meet some friends at a restaurant. The apartment I was living in was in close proximity to a couple of metro stops, and the line I needed was a few blocks away on a pretty busy street. When I was only a block from the stop, a guy looking to be about my age suddenly approached me, asking me if I knew where the metro stop was. I indicated the large yellow M glowing above the stop on the corner and thought that that would be the end of our conversation. Instead, he fell into step with me, explaining that he wasn't from the city and didn't know the train lines too well. I said it was no problem, and he gave me a funny look as he asked, "You aren't from here, are you?" I thought. He was right. French is my second language, and although I've spoken it from a young age, I still have an accent on a few words. Normally, I don't mind having an accent or people remarking that I'm not French, but when a guy you just met on the street one night comments on it, it can make you a little uneasy. I confirmed, though, that I wasn't French, and we actually ended up having a decent conversation as we walked to the metro stop, down the stairs, and through the turnstiles. During that first, and what would turn out to be our only conversation, he seemed nice enough and didn't set off any red flags. I told him where I was from and what I was studying, and he told me that he was in the city visiting some friends. We ended up getting on the same train, though even then I questioned whether he was actually going the same way as me or not, and kept talking until my stop. Right before I got off the train, he asked for my numbers so that we could meet up sometime, and in a move completely out of character for me, as is talking to strangers, I did. Big mistake. He texted me that Sunday, asking if I wanted to meet up on Wednesday. I agreed, but then he asked if we could meet at Châtelet. For anyone who doesn't know, Châtelet is an enormous metro stop near the center of Paris. Several metro lines run through it, as do other trains that go out of the city proper. It also connects to a huge shopping mall. When he asked this, I started to feel uneasy. My intuition told me that there was something wrong with wanting to meet up in a place that had so many ways in and out, a place where if you got on a certain train or were forced to do so, no one could find you. My mind tends to jump to worst-case scenarios, but my gut is never wrong. In any case, I tried to give him the benefit of the doubt, as he supposedly didn't know the city that well, so I told him that Châtelet was pretty big and it might be hard to find each other in there. I suggested meeting up at the bookstore in the connected mall, still a public place but less hectic, but he didn't seem to like the idea and stopped replying to my messages. The next day, Monday, I was on my way to a meeting with my boss when my phone buzzed and I saw it was a text message from him. "Can you call me now?" another message came in. "Or can I call you?" My intuition spoke up again in the back of my mind, telling me that something still wasn't right. I replied, "I'm going into a meeting right now. Let me get back to you." With that, I turned my phone all the way off and didn't turn it back on again until after the meeting was over and I was on the bus home an hour and a half later. Turning it back on, I almost dropped it as it started to buzz uncontrollably with several dozen text messages loading simultaneously. I only scanned them, there being so many, but they seemed to range from proposing that we meet at a friend's house on Wednesday night to, "Why won't you answer? Where the F are you?" followed by a number of missed call notifications, all from his number. My intuition was doing more than pinging at this point, so when his number popped up on the screen again, I turned the phone off again until I reached my apartment. Once again, I dare turn it back on and saw even more missed texts and calls from him. Pretty spooked at this point, I shoved the phone back into my purse and made dinner, not even looking at the phone until well after I had eaten. Once I could stomach it, I took the phone out of my purse. I felt a shiver go up my spine as I saw that he had called me no less than 16 times, and that his text messages had become more and more vulgar before ending with a final, "Fine, I guess this isn't working out. Maybe I'll see you again. Goodbye." I've never blocked a number so fast in my life and immediately called my mom. I could barely hold the phone again, though this time it was because I was shaking so badly. To this day, I can't help but feel that I dodged something extremely dangerous, more specifically, someone who was probably just looking for a girl to take advantage of and jumped at the chance when he met a young foreign one in a big city. I'm still not sure what possessed me to give him my number, but I console myself with the fact that I didn't tell him I was living near that metro stop where he approached me. I just have a feeling that he might have come looking for me. The lesson that I have taken away from this incident, aside from never giving my number out ever again, is to always trust my gut. She saved me before, saved me that day, and will most likely do it again.
Well, y'all, that is my time. I hope that y'all enjoyed the show as well as I did providing the entertainment for y'all to bring in Halloween. Happy Halloween, everybody. I hope y'all got y'all snacks and candy and stuff like that. Do not take things from strangers. I don't care how grown you are. Because everybody in this world as of late has been losing their ever-loving mind. So I want y'all to be safe. So I will be here tomorrow night. Same time, same place. Tomorrow night's show is going to be one for the books. So you would want to tune in. If you're listening to the playback, you would want to tune in tomorrow, even if you listen to it after the fact. You would want to listen to tomorrow night's show. I have something very special planned. Since it's going to be the last show of the series of 31 Days of Harlem. But before I get out of here, I'm going to leave y'all with my thought of the night. And my thought of the night is this. You can spend your whole lifetime changing the very outer part, exterior part of yourself. But if you don't take the time to learn what it is that is breaking down the foundation from the inside out, the only thing that you will ever have is a beautiful house on a termite-infested foundation, and all that you know will crumble as you try to rebuild. So with that being said, love, peace, and blessings. Pray before you lay. I love y'all, and good night.